Hi, can you slate your name, please?
Hi, I'm Brian Husky. I'm 5'10 and a half, and I live in Los Angeles.
Well, hello there, Slaters. Welcome back to Slate Your Name, the weekly podcast where an actor, that's me, chats with other actors about the ongoing grind that comes with pursuing a career in the performing arts. I am your host, Michael McMillan, and it's May. May in Hollywood, California. Wouldn't know it by looking out the window. It's very gloomy. The June gloom has already arrived. May is an interesting time of year in LA. It's always a month where I remember when it comes around every year that I could probably just disappear for a month. It's been a little busy, had some auditions here and there, been working on this podcast, been working on my other podcast, just finished a screenplay that I've been working on with a friend. So I'm up to stuff, but May's slow. May is the time of year where all the episodics, all those shows you love watching, especially on the networks, are on hiatus. And the big three, big four, are picking up all their fall shows and presenting them at the upfronts in New York City. I found out that the show that I tested for is not going further. So there you go. That's the way it shakes out. I like the people who are making that show. I'm sorry for them it's not going forward, but I guess it would have been a bigger disappointment if I did book that job back in, when was it? February, March, and they got all excited about it. And then to find out, it's not even going to happen. This is why the job is difficult. So May is a little slow. Went back to Kansas City, where I'm from, last week, and got to see my nephew graduate. That was awesome. But yeah, it's generally a time of year where I'm doing a little self-reflecting. I have my official 20th anniversary of living in LA coming up in July. I graduated college from Carnegie Mellon 20 years ago, like this week. So I don't know about you. May always makes me feel a little nostalgic, a little sad. I do sort of an emotional inventory check. Maybe you're the same. Maybe different times of year hold that for you. I still feel like May is the time of year where school's ended. School's out for the summer until the fall. That's never going to go away. That's always in my head. And I'm somebody who doesn't work a regular schedule or who has been in school for 20 years. But I hope you all are enjoying a lovely time and getting ready for summer. I'm excited. I think some good things are coming down the pipeline for all of us. I hope so. This week, I'm sitting down with actor and comedic performer Brian Husky. Brian has been in exactly 6 million things. This summer, you can hear him in the Bob's Burgers movie performing the role of regular-sized Rudy. He's also known for his roles in shows like Children's Hospital, People of Earth, New Girl, Veep. I mean, he's one of the funniest and hardest-working men in Hollywood, you guys. And I'm so excited that I got him for this. We had an awesome conversation. He really is. I got off this one, and I was like, I love Brian. What a lovely guy. But before we chat with Brian, let's call a quick company meeting. Come on, get your notebooks. Sit down, front row. Come on, come down, fill in the seats. Write to me with your questions and comments by dropping me an email at slateyournamepod@gmail.com. Guys, I gotta let you know, I've been checking this inbox and it is pretty empty. Who's out there? Who's listening? What do you want? What guests do you want? Are you a fan of the shows I've been on? True Blood, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, other things? Who do you want me to bring in? I want your feedback. Let's get a little conversation going. It's been 13 weeks. Write to me, please. SlateYourNamePod@gmail.com. Send me questions, opinions about movies, actors. Who are your favorite actors? Let's get this going. I want to know what you guys are thinking about the show and about, you know, are any of you guys actors? Are any of you guys out here in LA trying to make it happen? Are you in college? Are you studying theater? Did you just graduate college? I want to know who you guys are. So please write into me. And if you have your own crazy audition stories and stuff like that, send that in. I want to hear all that stuff and I can read those on the air as well. That would be great. Please send me your dreams, your aspirations, your hopes, your nightmares, your failures, whatever it is. I want to hear it. Please write to me. Speaking of you guys, the audience, I'm going to welcome Spencer Rickborn to the Green Room. Thanks for joining the Patreon, Spencer. You too can support the show by joining Slate Your Name, the Green Room, where every Tuesday you'll unlock a bonus episode where I kick back with that week's guest for some additional fun and dole out some career advice and answer your burning Hollywood questions. Gain access to the Green Room at patreon.com/slateyourname. Quick note, I will be taking next week off for the holiday, but I'll unlock an episode from the Green Room for you, all of you to enjoy. And my dear Greenies, patrons of the arts, are going to get a special episode, so there will be something new for everyone. Fret not. Finally, do me a favor. Give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I want more people to find the show. If you do, I will read it on the air, like this one, from al.fo. Enjoyable for those outside the business. I have absolutely nothing to do with acting or show business, and this podcast is still a fascinating and delightful look into acting and the entertainment industry. Well, thank you so much, Al. That's exactly the type of 5-star support I'm looking for. Thank you. All right, meeting adjourned. Let's sit down and talk with Brian Husky. Brian Husky.
Yeah.
First of all, thank you for being here.
Hey, thank you for having this venue in which artists can meet artists and discuss.
You sound like a man who's just been in the desert.
I've been in the desert with a 6-year-old, which I haven't been in contact with that for a while. That is a hats off to everyone.
Now,
I've been there and I forgot it all. It demands a lot of you.
I'm assuming this is not. Is it your own 6-year-old?
No,
or not
this
your,
is okay. This is my girlfriend's sister's niece.
Got it. What is there for a 6-year-old to do in the desert? Because that would seem like a boring place to be.
Well, we made it sure we got a place that had like a hot tub and then like cornhole and throwing things. And there was a tent. So my girlfriend and her would have meetings in the tent. Like she's really into having meetings, like business meetings, pretend business
like
meetings.
Zooming. Oh, got it.
Yeah.
Actually, that would be something you would do with a child of 2022.
Yeah.
You would have a meeting, but you would still Zoom them.
You go to different rooms and Zoom with them. Yes.
That's how you play business now.
And then the big thing is like, tell me a story about when you got in trouble. Tell me a story about an owie. Tell me another story about when you got in trouble. Tell me another story about an owie. Tell me another story about when you got in trouble. Tell me about an owie you got. Just it. Anytime there's like a quiet moment of just like, it's nice here.
That's wild because that's the exact format that I was planning for this interview.
Great.
So
one question 17 times.
tell me about a time you got an owie, Brian.
I mean, in terms of acting, it's very Meisner for sure. Either that or I was like, oh, she's trying to break my soul. Oh, she works for the government. She's been sent to break me. It was great.
Not only are you a very funny guy, but you also have great taste in music. And I know this because I believe that we met at a Stephen Malkmus concert years
ago. Was that
the
first time we met?
Well, that's what I was trying to remember. Not that this is important, but
no.
I feel like We surely had met in passing before, but I was like, I feel like that's when we shook hands and we're like, hello, hello.
That's probably when we got to hang out.
Yes, maybe the first time we actually hung out.
I think I had met you via Nate Cordry.
Yes,
maybe
at
his place.
Yes, yes, I think so too.
Yeah.
That's true. But that's the first time we would sort of like hung out.
And that was a Malcolmist show where he had a few cranky moments.
He was a very grumpy.
He's a grumpy old indie.
Yeah, he really is. They're coming to, by the way, this is going to be indie rock talk. Pavement's coming to LA on the 23rd. Did you see
them? I've got tickets.
All right.
You got them already?
I thought they were on sale until Friday. You must have a
No, I got, I mean, maybe they added a show because they had like three shows and they sold out, or their tickets were $7,000.
Yeah.
And then I was like, waited a while and I got some decent ones.
Now, did you go to Pavement and Sonic Youth at the Hollywood Bowl in like 2011?
No, I did not.
That was a good show.
I know.
You have been in a video.
Yeah.
Of Guided by Voices.
I know. Two.
Two?
Have I been in two? Well, now, the second one we kind of made and submitted.
Got it.
It's like a fan thing that they now have officially said, like, yeah, this is the video for it. We're like, oh, okay.
Was that when you were already established?
That was like pandemic. I think that was just a pandemic. Everyone started making bread and being creative for 2 weeks and then freaking out.
Oh, is this when you had that like Zoom meeting where you and all of your friends sang Guided by Voices to people to cheer the world up? Was that?
Yeah, that
was
what
that was.
Yeah, and then that didn't go as viral as we thought it would.
Yeah, and the backlash was sort of surprising and hurtful.
Yeah,
wasn't
we thought My Valuable Hunting Knife would really make everyone take a pause and assess what's happening. But yeah, the other one was they're both through Mike. I always want to say Mike Postal. I just shortened his name to Mike Postal, but I think Potalicus.
I think don't ask me.
Yeah, I'm gonna
now
make a name up.
I can't get into like I'm a bad music fan where like I'll name the lead guy and then I like don't ask me to name the entire band.
Yeah.
So what came first for you being and actually. This is a good question to have because I find that a lot of funny comedy people are also into, maybe it's a generational thing, but also are into like good indie rock. So I'm curious, what came first, comedy or indie rock for you?
Indie rock. Well, okay, so comedy came first. Like comedy came second grade. I had my speech was how I was going to grow up and be a comedian and do comedy like Don Knotts. Tim Conway, Bob Hope, maybe, even though I found some of his jokes to be hacky. I said that in the speech. Sorry, Bob Hope Airport. I was always really interested. I was always fascinated by comedy and wanted to do something with it. And then I kept kind of getting scared off by it. I'd scare myself from it, from doing it. Or not.
Stage fright or what?
I think just general kind of like I had not put myself out there in a lot of ways. Like I had not done any sports. I just didn't have much sort of self-confidence in.
You don't have to play sports to be in comedy. I think you shouldn't realize that.
I really most one of the prerequisites not to. But I was like, but it, in terms of like I was just not used to sort of like I want to do this thing. I don't know how to do it. I guess I can't do it. You know.
Yeah.
I had that mindset.
Was there a lack of people around you, peers around you, were you kind of a loner when it came to that stuff, or did you have
no,
a crew?
It's weird. Like, I had friends who were into comedy, and we were all into comedy. It just seemed like a thing was like, I know people do this. I don't know how to get from A to what felt like Z at that point.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I played in a band in high school. We did like a cover band. And that's when
what was your stuff?
We were called the Winkermans, which right there, my choice, funny name.
Little signal, hey, if you like the music, I might also have some jokes after the show.
I might talk too much on the mic if you have the time. I will provide that. And then, so we did the Velvet Underground, Violent Femmes, REM, The Clash.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we did Layla. course, you have to. And we did what's that? I'm a picker. I'm a grinner.
Steve Miller.
Yeah, Miller. Steve Miller.
I almost said Steve Merchant.
Yeah, the comedy version of that song.
Yeah.
So yeah, so then I did that, and then when I got to college, I was like, I was interested in doing that stuff. I went to the radio station. I said, I want to do like a comedy radio show. And I told them my idea. They're like, that's too weird. And this is in the South, by the way.
Okay. So did you grow up in the South?
I was born in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay.
And then I went to school at UNC at Greensboro.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Go Spartans. And so I pitched ideas there. They thought they were too weird. I went to the newspaper and asked if I could write like a column and told them my ideas. They said that's too weird. I went to the theater department and said, I'm interested in improv. Can you give me any tips or tell me which way to go for that? And this asshole was like, unless you dedicate your life to theater and its tools, you have no business playing with them.
Was he wearing an ascot and have a cigarette holder?
I was like, Southern Regional Theater teacher, you have dashed my dreams. Why are you suddenly British? Not British before. I think you're from Fayetteville.
That'll turn you off to going to theater school or taking any theater classes.
Oh, hell
real
yeah.
Fast.
I think theater people, just theater stuff. Yeah, it all turned me off.
It looks like I'm putting my thumbs down, but I'm actually gesturing
You're
towards myself.
You're the problem.
Like, that was me. Like I went the full theater class route. I was a goofy, loud kid who wanted to be funny, but then I sort of like, I mean, I always played funny, I guess the funnier parts in all the plays, but I got, you know, there was like time when I was like, you know, I'm reading Speak with Distinction. I'm learning about diphthongs. Yeah. I am taking this seriously.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I wish I had learned about diphthongs. Like my mouth is a muddy puddle sometimes.
Oh, it didn't help me at all. It made me sound. It actually just made me speak like a bad Cary Grant for about a year. That was the thing about like going to my college. It was like everyone was sort of trying to speak in the standard American accent in all these plays, and it was like nobody talks like that anymore.
That's so
you know,
funny. You'll like never remember what my voice is like, nor mine.
Yes, it was. So there was this period of like all of us were speaking in this very stiff way, and then I think at one point, like I remember, like famously, Holly Hunter went to my college, Carnegie Mellon,
okay,
and there were still teachers who were like, She wouldn't take to it. I was like, I think it worked for her.
Yeah, I totally think
clearly,
it worked for her.
There's a lesson to learn here.
That is one thing that as I've done this, it's gone through you go through those iterations where you're like, oh man, the joke I made is like the people you remember are the people who have something very different.
Yeah.
And if they have some talent that's the same thing as just like, there's something about you that's just funny. You look funny. That's
gonna
give you a bunch of ammo, you know.
Yeah, there's this I think there's this concept in theater school where the idea is we're gonna break all the bad habits down, kind of neutralize you with this. And it sounds like I'm shitting on, you know, I just talked on the last Patreon episode about how classical training does help. So,
yeah.
You know, look, I have mixed feelings about all this stuff. I have mixed feelings whether you should go to college or not for acting. But, like, I do think the idea is, like, it breaks you down of your bad habits. It sort of neutralizes you, puts you in a standard of practice and technique. And then through that, you sort of, I think in their minds, you're, like, rising like the phoenix into this, like,
yeah.
Wonderful stage performer, but I don't know if it works that way.
Yeah, is it sort of in taking away your bad habits? The bad habits are sort of the hang-ups you would have about trying a variety of different things, right?
I think
they come
that or
neutralize
just,
you a little bit.
I think like that, or it can be that. It's also like you're carrying so much tension in your shoulders, and you need to like drop that, or you're like, you know, it's usually like weird body stuff that you bring in because you're a teenager. And if you're a nerdy theater kid, you know, like you got to learn how to like loosen all that stuff up, or you're speaking
totally
in a weird way, or you clench your jaw when you talk. So it's all sort of like or you're like, get really big and performative, you know, and right. It's like, okay, rein that in. Let's find you in this, you know.
So this was all high school age stuff.
High school, happening. But then into college. Yeah, right. Yeah. What it? I wondered for you finding comedy. Was it? Was there any of that breaking of bad habits, or once this guy turned you away and said, my dear boy, where did you run to? And then what? How was like? I always hesitate using the term craft because then I sound like that guy who scared you away from theater.
Yeah,
but like, where did you finally find that comedy community? And
it was like, so I went from that. So then I just put my efforts in playing in a band. Mm-hmm. And then we just, you know, because I, going
you
back to your original bass guitar, mm-hmm. Your original point, there's a lot of overlap I've found between comedy and indie music, because I think to me they're kind of in the same vein of they share a lot of commonalities in that, well, specifically from where I came from improv, because it's like a community, and then in that community you have all these small groups, and the groups are competitive against one another, but they're also very supportive of one another. And then the other thing about the commonality is, like, I feel like both in comedy and in music, maybe more specifically indie, or just my bias or whatever, but there's this great kind of vibe of like permission given to just like, what are we going to make? What's it going to sound like? What's it going to look like? What's the idea? It's very, it feels a little more, I guess, DIY. Now I'm sounding, you know, self-conscious.
Why are we so shy about our terms?
Oh my God, the craft
tonight.
DIY. Jones, let's just hobby shop.
Let's just own it, okay, Michaels? Yeah. Let's just do it.
Michaels. So, but within that band stuff, like we had kind of humorous lyrics, or maybe like,
that was my next question, is in your original stuff, how funny were your songs?
They weren't intentionally funny. They were funny in the sense of, like, I guess the Smiths, like Morrissey's lyrics are hilarious.
Yes, I agree 100%.
Elvis Costello's lyrics are biting and hilarious. They Might Be Giants are weird songs, that kind of vein. Mm-hmm. So it was that kind of thing.
But no, like, parody songs.
No,
or
sort of
like that.
Yeah, it wasn't like double stuff at the diaper fight, you know, whatever that song would be. But there we did play with bands who were in that vein of like, they were in the band called Kick in the Bucket, and they had like songs like Underwear, Bra Raid, like just.
Yeah. These guys are obsessed with what's on under your clothes.
They love undergarments because. They love working at frats.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the thing I learned about it. I was like, oh, you're just writing fucking shitty songs to play at frats and get paid a lot of money.
Ever get a red solo cup thrown at you while performing at a frat party?
Yeah, actually.
Okay.
In a basement one. And the saddest thing was there were maybe like 7 people in the audience. So we easily knew who threw it.
And how?
All right, which one are you? I know it was you, but we're gonna ask which one of you threw that.
How far did you go with the band stuff? Or did you ever take it to the point where you're like recording? Were you on any small labels?
We were on a tiny label in Chapel Hill called Moist Records, which is basically like these two guys with trust funds just started a record label, but.
Mm-hmm.
The first version, the band before Squirrel Nut Zippers, one of the guys was on there. This side project from this band called Camper Band Beethoven was on there.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of other like local guys. So we just recorded an album and did 7 inches and toured around regionally.
That's so cool.
It was fun. It was very fun. It was a gratifying.
Van shenanigans.
We had like a beige Volkswagen 80s van that our guitarist who was Chaos would refuse to put oil in.
They don't call him Chaos for nothing,
they
man.
They don't call him buy my new engine, McGirt, for nothing. Yeah, and he's just like, he couldn't believe he'd lost. He had to get two engines in a row. We're just like, all right.
Everyone in college has a friend who's got a station wagon that's on death's door. Mm-hmm. I remember my buddy had like a blue 1985 Volvo station wagon that he had been handed down.
Yeah.
And I mean, I vividly remember sideswiping a parked car with that and like stripping some of the siding off, like,
yeah,
totally just like driving down to the Unimart totally sober, but just calling my mom and going, what do I do? She's like,
did I do? I had to change a tire on the way back from the desert.
Oh wow.
I had a real manly moment for my girlfriend.
I was gonna say how long into your acting career did it take to learn how to change a tire? Because I know for me it was a while.
Oh, it's not until I got that Firestone audition that I really had to study the character. I was like, huh, I've gotta change a tire.
Go out with a knife, slash your own tire.
Just screamed at it. It was like, there's a little bit of an argument, like, let's just call AAA. It's like, I really think I can do this. We will be here for 4 hours if we wait for AAA for some guy to be like, oh my God, all right, let me do this.
Me, it'll take 3.5. Just going to save 30 minutes.
Completely.
Are you good with the, what is this called? The thing that you take the lug nuts off. Actors change tires.
I know. That's, is that? The power to the enforcer, the lugger, delugger.
The delugger.
I had to stand on it.
Me too. I have to stand on it to get it to go.
Oh yeah, there's no way. Because I weigh strong enough. I should have in my slate said, and I weigh 140 and have been that weight since high school. It was I don't know. It was pretty cool.
God bless. I mean, were you staying that slim just to avoid the like nickname that comes inherently with your last name? Like,
say again? Oh, do you stay that? My body just. I just have a squirrel's metabolism.
God bless you.
I know.
If you could, I mean, if you could gain like another 100 husky, you know, that's like, there you go. Perfect. Listen, character actor name.
Maybe I'm also very self-conscious about my last name, so I'm not giving any wiggle room for fat shaming.
That's what I was saying.
None.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So you're touring around in the station wagon, not learning how to change a tire quite yet.
Refusing.
Not putting oil in it. Where do you end up after college, and where do you start? Were you UCB guy, Second City guy, so IO guy?
I moved to New York to go to photo school because I got a minor in. So I was an English major, and I thought wanted to be a comedy writer.
Mm-hmm.
But then my path is just being turned off by people, just avoiding people to not. Follow my dreams, basically. Yeah,
fair.
I'll prejudge you so I won't take a risk. That's my path. So I was turned off by the by the communication department, but I knew the people in it. Some people in it, they're like, yeah, it's bullshit. So I got into photography, mm-hmm. which my dad was into, you know, before I didn't meet him until it was later. And so I had, until it was later in my life, so I had heard about him being a photographer, and I was like, oh, I'm pretty good at this too. So I went to school in New York for a year, and then I started to photo assist. And then Robert Cordry and I became roommates.
Oh, wow.
Through a mutual friend. Robert Cordry was starting to do comedy. He was doing acting, fancy mm-hmm. acting, and then he started to do the sketch group, and he would be like, you're funnier than the sketch group I'm doing stuff with. I'd rather do something with you. And so that's basically, I just needed someone to give me permission or to say, like, you can do this. And so, excuse me, I'm burping. So
that's
then
okay, I am too.
Hiccuping, burping, desert.
This is what happens every episode. I drink a LaCroix and I say, don't do that next time. And then I just bring a LaCroix back and I quietly burp when my guests are talking.
Yeah, I shoveled down a bunch of chicken and rice, and now I have these breathy protein burps.
Chicken and rice, Brian Husky's tips to staying slim, y'all.
Hey, man, if you burp it out, you eat it fast and burp it out, That's half the battle.
You just burp those calories straight out of your face.
You just turn it into a gas as fast as you can, and it never gets to your stomach.
If it comes out the other end, you know it's too late. You got to get it out front early.
Get it out. Any mouth version. Just get it back out. And so he started doing UCB classes a session before me. And we were in, like, no joke, the first year of them teaching classes.
I was going to say this had, I mean, I'm not, yeah. I'm just guessing based on knowing the trajectory of both of your careers. This had to be towards the beginning of UCB.
Yeah. And so, like, going back to your, like, you had asked about where did I get my stuff? I got all my training stuff came from that. So the bad habits I had was kind of not knowing anything.
Yeah.
And having a propensity to love to be really extremely loud and rage filled on stage.
You're like, there is a sensitive photographer inside of me, but there's also this.
But there's this that I've been waiting for, because
one day I will have a secret Instagram account that's just my photos of the desert. But right now, you're going to get this.
Going to get this, folks. Yeah, it is. That was one. I mean, and that's very similar to a band thing. I was like, with improv, it's like, I mean, we're going to make this up. We don't know what's going to happen. This could be insane. You know, that aspect of it was very appealing to me too.
When you started taking these classes and you're like, I like DL, I like to, were there people, I guess you had an instructor. Did you have an instructor, or you just?
Oh yeah. I mean, we had the original UCB people. So we had Matt Walsh, Amy Poehler, Matt Besser, Ian Roberts, and then this great guy named Armando Diaz.
Yeah. Who was your first teacher?
Armando.
Okay.
He did the babies. And then Amy would do level two, and kind of like, that was definitely a thing where she'd be like, kind of point out, find your little like, oh, okay, that's not truthful. You're being really funny. So just let's cut that out. And I do think that's, you know, in terms of what you're talking about, like breaking the bad habits or breaking you down, you do have to kind of do some subtractive work.
And what was that for you?
I think it would be, it's interesting. What were my sort of bad habits? I had a little bit of a status issue sometimes. I would play low status, but I would try to maybe steer it towards my version of what I thought it was supposed to be.
Got it. Yeah.
And I definitely... I mean, this is one thing that I can't remember which instructor, but they were like, I know you get stuck with really bad people on stage. And so you do really good work because you make them look really good. And I understand when you want to take it from them and be like, no, we're going to do this. He's like, but just trust that you're getting better because you're working with someone. You're carrying dead weight.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of shows where it was like before, you know, your final improv show, your Herald show that you do at the end of the class, you like do a show. And I got stuck with this one woman and the first year. And I was like, told everyone else, which is very heartbreaking, that but like at the secret meeting, but I was like, I don't want to walk out with blank. If she walks out, someone else take the bullet. No, totally. She steps out. No one. No one. And so then I'm just thrown back to like, dodgeball, last one picked, come on. And so I stepped out there and had to do a scene about like magic hamsters who were working in the office. And I was like,
what office?
The craziest office I've been in, that's for sure.
Ma'am, I'm just here to deliver the water. I don't
work
here.
Well, let me heighten this out of control within the first sentence. Are you on for that?
Were you ever terrified of doing improv?
I wasn't. I mean, I was terrified I was never terrified enough to not do it because that was something I recognized. Like, ooh, I have I love this. This scratches such a mental itch for me. Mm-hmm. Making something up, being funny, getting a reaction. Like, I was like, that's worth all the, you know, risk and suffering and stuff. But hands would get clammy. Sometimes the armpit sweat would connect over the shoulders.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That takes some real talent.
That's some real focused body dysfunction.
Top of the shoulder sweat. That's good.
Real. I mean, again, we're like performing in a refinished like warehouse space.
Yeah, that's the other thing is there's no air
in
moving
the summer,
around.
Summer, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, still not attractive.
Wow.
Yeah. But I loved it.
That just got the ball rolling, I assume. Like,
I think, yeah. I mean, it's like at that theater, you would start to perform, and then there are different sort of moves within the ranks. So you get put on a Herald team, and then you get to perform once a week. And then maybe you get put on another specialty show on the weekend. And then you just start to jump into other shows that people are doing. And then the office will recommend you to casting people who call up.
Cool.
So they started to be aware of like UCB and like commercial agents and stuff would call up. So like, hey, do you have anybody who's like a good father type or whatever? And then Conan, getting bits on Late Night with Conan O'Brien was sort of the other big feather in the cap.
All right, I want to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about this. I want to hear about those early Conan jobs.
Okay, I'll stay here and wait.
Oh. Shovel that chicken, everybody else. We'll be right back. I'm talking to Brian Husky, and last time we left off, he was getting gigs at Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, way back, getting to dress up like a lobster, or an emasculated man who has like a 2-inch penis that you have to pull a toupee off your head and then shoot.
Low status.
Yeah, low status, totally. Totally low status bits. Yeah.
What was that like walking into? Had you been a Conan fan? Were you like late night fan?
I was not a huge fan. Like that's the thing about me. Like I'm not a big consumer. I love like when I find something, like, ooh, that's great. But I'm not. I've always had like some kind of actor's guilt about that I'm not just like voracious cinephile and all this kind of stuff. I'm always like, yeah, this is. I realize more and more like, this is something I really enjoy. I'm kind of good at a lot of creative things. And this one I really makes me one
but
of the happiest.
But there was the second grader in you who loved Tim Conway and occasionally critiqued Bob Hope's work. But like, you know, so there must have been some level of appreciation of like, oh, walking in on that set and being like, okay, this is part of this tradition.
Oh, yeah.
That
totally.
I loved. I mean, right? I mean, at some point there had to be a moment of full circle coming around where you're like, oh, this is.
It took me a long time to get to the full circle because I had a lot of imposter syndrome for a long time.
Oh, boy. Tell me about it.
Like, real bad. Just like, even when I was getting TV work and film work, I was just like, well, they don't know that all I did was take some improv classes.
What did you think everyone else had done?
But that's the so I worked on a show called Selfie that was like a short-lived ABC show. And that had, so we were sitting around talking one time and we went through and figured out what the range of actors were. And so there's David Harewood, who was a British Academy trained, you know, badass. Mm-hmm. Devine Joy Randolph, who went to Yale. Me, who did just improv. Karen Gilliam, who's another Academy person. And then John Cho never did acting classes or anything.
Yeah.
He just got put into a play by a friend of his and just started doing it that way.
They were like, you're handsome. You look like you can say some lines. Why don't you get up on stage and read this?
Yeah. Yeah. You're very calm. You can handle this. But it was like, so that was one of the very first things where I was like, oh, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, like, what you, because go back to our crafted tools, but it's true. It's like, however, whatever tools you show up with, if you can make this with us, great.
Yeah. I mean, I remember I worked with an actor who's like a full-fledged TV star now, Omari Hardwick from Power. We did a TNT show.
Right.
Years ago that lasted one season, and he like was a jock. He played for the NFL. He like played for the Chargers for a season and then went into acting, you know. So it is fascinating because I think especially where I came from in the theater stuff, you know, that it's like, all right, you got to go on this track and then you're going to audition and get an agent, blah, blah, blah. You get out to L.A. and New York as well. I mean, New York maybe a little less because it's such a theater culture out there, but not necessarily. But you get out here and you realize, like, oh, these, not only did my co-star not go to college, they didn't study theater, they're just like a good looking person who was like, or a funny person or whatever, or funny and good look, they're like, I'm gonna go do this. I'm just gonna come out to LA, and they just waited tables and auditioned and try to get an agent, hustled, and there they are, you know.
Yeah, it's very there's a lot of stuff that got demystified as I went through it. Maybe Conan was a little bit like that, where you kind of get there and, well, I mean, it is really freaking cool to go through 30 Rock and then go up through the elevators and then you come out and there's like, you know, a llama in the hallway and just like backstage at a comedy show. And
then
you rehearse the bit. You try not to blow it at the sort of audition of the bit to whether it's going to go on the show. Then you get on the show. It was incredibly exciting. Even when then you're just like, I'm doing the dumbest stuff possible.
I mean, I guess Conan is the show, right, that felt the most like the DIY indie rock kind of thing, I would imagine, especially at the time. And it was the most in spirit of, you know what I mean? It had that feel to it. It was for the
It had that feel,
people.
And it also had it had a little bit of TV tradition feel of like Sid Caesar, you know, or Phil Silvers, just like the, you know, because a lot of those old comedy shows, they did weird bits, like, and it was about that. It was still like, you know, comedy just was like, did you see the most unfathomably weird thing this guy said on TV the other night, you know? Which I love that. I mean, I think that does go back to that thing of like, if you can, let's make something that's going to blow people's mind for just like a second, enough for them to go, ah! You know.
right. All right, Brian. Well, now that we're in your early stages of your career, I'm going to go.
And I started a little late from everybody else. So that's the other thing. I was like, everybody's been doing this like you, like since high school. These are all my hangups I had. And then, and then that got kind of flattened out in improv because you'd have these range of people of like, I'm recently divorced. I'm going to start doing improv. Then they find this scene, you know.
Right. So. Yeah. That's the way to, I mean, I would say, just circling back real quick about the training, I do think, see, I took, what is it, 101 at UCB, and then I went to go do True Blood, so I couldn't take the next class, and then I never came back to it.
Right.
You know, so I've got a little bit of improv training, but that I have to say, and I, you know, I can pick it up and I can, but like, that's the one aspect of my toolbox that I'm like, still a little, you know, I still feel, that's where I feel like an imposter for sure.
Right.
It's like, I get it, but I always feel like, oh, I feel like I'm generating or I'm bringing stuff towards me or whatever. You know, I have to really warm up to it sometimes.
Yeah.
But I feel like that is a place where you really can learn great technique, especially for auditioning or commercial where they ask you to ad lib or do so many, you know.
Yeah. The best, I think, to me, one of the things that is best about improv in terms of, like if you have written material and then you want to give yourself some permission to loosen it up a little bit, I found it as a good thing of like, oh, I can figure out what happens after and before And maybe if I throw in, you know, a line here or there that sort of like changes the pace of it and stuff, that's a choice too. And I I've kind of given myself a little permission when I like do TV and stuff. I'll ask him, I was like, is it okay if I like throw a line in here and there and stuff, not changing the story or anything, but just like, yeah. And I find it helps me, and sometimes it helps the other performer to kind of loosen it up.
I started doing that on True Blood, which was weird because it was such a scripted show, not mm-hmm. throwing in a lot of ad libs in the scene necessarily, although a couple did slip in.
Yeah.
But playing the moment leading up, like I remember there was a scene where Anna Camp and I, who played my wife, we were like, the scene started with us in the middle of an argument mm-hmm. with scripted lines.
Right.
And I was like, let's, while they're saying sound and all this stuff, let's just improvise four lines before they come in. You know yeah. what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we can just be in that rhythm. And we started doing a lot of that, like playing the moment before they call action, line, and then we'd go into the dialogue.
Right.
And that was always really helpful. You know, yeah. no one really gave us permission to do that, but nobody stopped us either. You know?
Yeah. And that's another thing I picked up. It's not necessarily improvising, but it is in that vein. Like on Veep, Julia Louis-Dreyfus would be like, we'd run a scene and then she'd be like, all right, this is written great, let's mess it up, let's juice it up, let's make it like active. And then you get permission to kind of like find different speeds for how you're getting through it, the overlap of it, like building in a searching for the word, you know, like now, mm-hmm. like those kind of things were great, because they're such funny written lines that you could just sort of say them. And if you say them in a certain cadence, they would come off like a comedy scene. But the thing is to like embed it, to put it underneath this thing that has like real stakes and stuff.
Right. Right. And then would you guys, because also talk about a cast full of people who have the ability to improvise. I mean, yeah. everybody, yeah, top yeah. to bottom. Would you then go back after you would mess it up, play it as scripted, and or would that just be sort of the fun run? Would you go, we have that, now let's do this?
We would kind of like, it was different from when the British guys were doing the show and then mm-hmm. they handed it off to the English guys. The Americans were much more scripted. And they would give you alternate lines. So that part of it, it would just be sort of like, let's just loosen up the lines and our delivery over it and kind of overlap and that kind of thing. With the other guys, and they would let you do, you work the scene till they feel it's done, and then they would do a fun run. But with the Americans, it didn't feel like that point where you're like, have we figured everything out about this? We're not going to sort of suddenly.
Right.
The difference with the British thing is that they would let you kind of be loose with it, and you could add a few things. And the other thing they did is, like, in the script writing process, they would have the script, you would come and rehearse it with it, and they're like, okay, what do you want to, is there anything you want to do different? And they would just let you improvise before it even went to film.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And sometimes the improv would help with rewrites. It would kind of, like, do that kind of stuff. So it was really, the coolest thing was, like, it was a super inclusive process.
Mm-hmm.
But when, you know, when you're finally taping it, you would do some, add some stuff, and then you could do a fun run. And usually the fun run was just kind of like blowing out the additions you had already done.
Right.
Because you don't want to sort of, at the end of it, throw a whole new thing, unless it's just a button joke, you know what I mean?
Right, because that's tricky, because there have been instances, Crazy X, we would ad-lib a lot, you know, early on, and then I think they started to crack down. They're like, guys, this is taking too long.
Yeah,
you
totally.
Know what I mean? There's that part, aspect of it,
production.
Too. But sometimes, the thing that sucks is, like, when you're doing a scene like that, you're like, okay, throw in some stuff here and there, and somebody will come up with something fun, but their coverage has already been shot, and yeah. then you're like, well, this is never going to make it in, because they're not going to turn the cameras back around for the person to enter, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So completely. It is that delicate balance of like, oh man, I have this thing, but they're never coming back to me, so I don't want to introduce a whole new bit here. But
and the worst thing, I did this movie before Christmas, and I get so mad when directors who don't know how to do improv will just let people improvise.
Mm-hmm.
Just say, we're just going to improvise this. And it just creates chaos. And it creates unusable material. And it just creates... And it, so it's like, if anyone's listening and you're going to do improv, know what you're in for editing-wise. And if you like something, have them repeat it.
Yeah. I remember a producer friend had shown me, this is years ago, and again, I'm not an authority on improv, but she'd shown me a show that was like, she was like, we just cut together this pilot, it's all improvised,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think it was, I think it was just kind of cast with actors like me, but not a mm-hmm. lot of people who were experienced, and this thing was edited so crazily, because you could just tell, they were like, cutting around big chunks, like the rhythm of it was like, like the camera never held on anyone for long, and I just remember like feeling so bad. I was like, it's kind of unwatchable, and it didn't go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was such a, it was actually a really cool idea, but it was like, oh, this is where like people like Brian Husky come in. They gotta like really get people who can do this to do it.
Yeah, and it's also. It is knowing, like, you're writing on film, which is all it is. You're writing on film. So mm-hmm. anything that you write that you want, make sure you get it, because it can be an offline scene, you know, like you said, an off-scene line.
Yeah.
Is brilliant. And then you're like, how are you built this?
We can't do it. All right. We're already running... into the end of the show.
Dang.
We'll make this one quick. Okay. We've already kind of hit on some of the shows that I want to bring up, but I go down your IMDb list.
Sure.
I'm going to name a character or two.
Oh, get and ready you're gonna, for a lot of...
I know. I'm looking at, you know, teacher. Mm-hmm. And then just a lot of, like, Daryl, Tim, Josh, bro. Just a lot of, like, white guy names here.
Yeah.
Which I get as well. But then I'm gonna name the character, and then you're gonna tell me what show this is from. This is called Show Me Your Name. The first one up, Chet.
Chet.
This should be easy.
That's Children's Hospital.
That's right. I have to bring up Children's Hospital because people are starting to get mad at me now when I go too obscure with people's IMDb.
you're going to start easy. And then you're going to start to get into the vice principal territory.
Yeah, exactly. So this, I mean, well, that must have just felt like hanging out with friends, shooting something.
Oh, yeah. So good. So, yeah, that was, that's like Rob is a major force in my life of just like good things happening, which has been really nice.
That's
we were also following the one of the most valuable things we got from Matt Walsh was what's the best way to do this? He's like, I have found that you find like-minded people and you go and you start to get more work. And then as other people get more work, you give them opportunities, and then your collective voice gets out there, and you get to make the stuff you want to make. And that's really what Rob's, you know, the Daily Show put him in a position where he was like, oh, he's one of the first ones, you know, out of the life raft.
The broke, yeah.
Yeah. And so then he had the web series thing, and he's just like, I'm just going to do this weird thing with all of our bits that we think are funny.
And all my favorite stuff, I feel like, and actors come from groups that feel like a repertory company like that. You know what I mean? Even down to like Paul Thomas Anderson's movies, especially, you mm-hmm. know, Boogie Nights, Magnolia, like John C. Reilly, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Julianne Moore, like watching them, you could tell it was different thing, but you could tell they also very funny people, but had that collective. Edgar Wright's another one with, you know, the Nick Frost and Simon Pegg, like those groups, you know, that go on to then spin off and do their own things. All my favorite performers and movies and stuff seem to come back to exactly what you're describing.
Yeah, and I think it's for us, it's probably like growing up loving like Monty Python and Mr. Show and Kids in the Hall.
Mr. Show's another one.
So these like collectives, and that's just the thing of like, if you have if there's a shared language, which again goes back to improv, like it's like, okay, if I know you have some language around improv, there's a shorthand where we can get to the objective or whatever much quicker. But if you're doing it with your friends, you have that shorthand of like, you don't have to explain it. It's just like, okay, I got it. You know, let's do that.
Just like a band.
Just like a band, your, man. Oh, man, full
like
circle.
Just band, man.
Going
yeah.
back to the Winkermans.
See, that's how you do it, kids. All right. I'm going to do one quick one. I'm scrolling through.
Okay.
Here's a fun one.
All right.
Again, this is a... Oh, actually, let's do this. John Landis.
John Landis. I was John Landis in... Yeah. I can never get this name.
It's a tough one. Do you want me to give it to you?
Beautiful, stupid...
A futile pretty? And stupid gesture.
A futile and stupid gesture, yes.
Yeah. Is that the first time you've played a real person?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
And were you a big National Lampoon? Was that on your comedy radar growing up?
I did. I tried it. I read some. I did that. And then they had their little, what was that other? There's this other humor magazine that sort of came from the ashes of that. I can't remember. Weirdly, one of the biggest influences they made this fake yearbook that I just remember getting, like, one of those things where I was just like, this is fucking so funny. Like, I was angry about it. Like, I was baffled by how brilliant I thought it was. Because it was just hitting me in that sweet spot. I was like, I'm a fucking senior, and they have this thing? Oh, my God.
Couldn't have hit you at a more perfect time. Also, like, what a great idea. Why has nobody done this yet?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What a perfect thing to make fun of and have fun with.
Just the whole bit of it was just like, it was a high school of sheep. So it was just pictures of sheep for all the pictures, for every club, every portrait, every football team.
That's brilliant.
It was just a bit that like sustained itself from the very beginning to the end. I was like, God.
How do you hold that?
I know.
Awesome, man. Well, I mean, you have so much, you have such a great body of work, and I mean, we unfortunately don't have any more time. On this, so I just wanted to give you a compliment.
Sneak into the back room.
We're going to sneak into the green room now. Let's do this first. Why don't you tell everybody what projects you want them to check out?
Okay.
And what social media accounts you want them to check out, if any? And then
Elon Musk.
Oh, great.
Check him out.
Yeah, he's check this guy out.
He's very interesting.
Yeah. Big social media presence.
Big, now really big one.
Yeah.
Dominant, I was. I am on Twitter and Instagram at @TheBrianHusky. Not much on Twitter. And
no,
I'm also, I have a podcast that I do with Charlie Sanders sometimes when he's not writing things, called Bald Talk, where we do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
But we slip in. So when did you get into being bald? Well, how did they break you down to make you bald? What craft of bald are you?
What bad habits of baldness did you have to break?
Yeah.
Before you could be
less
honestly
aired.
Bald.
That, and then I don't know what it's, there's the Bob's Burgers movies coming out.
Oh yeah, that's big.
In the
May. People are gonna be very excited about that.
I got some Rudy action in that.
Fantastic.
Great.
Well, thank you so much, Brian. Cue us up. You got a little tease for the story you're gonna tell in the after show.
I was trying to decide which one. This is the most uncomfortable audition scenario I've ever been in.
Those are our favorite. All right.
Yeah.
We'll see you guys in the green room.
Okay.
In just a moment, I guess.
Hey, guys. Keep acting.
Keep acting.
And
you know what?
Scene.
All right. You can hear Brian's story right now in the after show. Over at Slate Your Name, The Green Room, patreon.com/slateyourname. Follow me at McMills on Instagram, and follow us at Slate Your Name Pod on Instagram for all your Latest fun photos of the of our guests and any other information you might, visual information that I might send your way. If you need an acting coach, you can contact me to help you out with an audition or scene preparation, whatever's going on, college monologues. Write to me at bookitwithmike@gmail.com. That's it for this week, you guys. Thank you for listening. Reminder, I'll be back with a regular episode in 2 weeks. Until next time, don't call us, we'll call you. Slate Your Name is executive produced by Ryan Countshouse and Michael McMillan, and engineered by Ryan Countshouse. Our theme music is by Riley Bray. Please like and follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.